This is an ABC podcast.
So there's a massive shortage in staff because no one can find anywhere to stay. I've lost staff because they haven't been able to find accommodation to stay in the area, which is really, really tough.
A housing crisis has affected many coastal tourist towns in recent months. Now ahead of the ski season, the High Country is feeling the squeeze, putting pressure on many businesses. And we meet members of the growing group of female competitors in the often male-dominated world of motorsport.
I was nervous because I was nervous of criticism, to be honest, because I didn't want to be judged, you know, going against all the guys and not really knowing what I was doing yet. But they totally surprised me and everyone was super supportive.
I'm Alex Hyman and this is Australia Wide. Australia has secured an extra 20 million doses of the imported Pfizer coronavirus vaccine, less than a day after the nation's vaccination program was hit by safety concerns with the AstraZeneca jabs. The Pfizer vaccine is now the preferred vaccination for Australians under the age of 50, after the AstraZeneca vaccine was linked to a small number of rare blood clotting cases, around the world. Only 1 million of the Commonwealth's first allocation of 20 million Pfizer doses have been delivered so far. But the Prime Minister insists the total 40 million doses will be in the country by the end of the year. He spoke earlier today.
The Australian Government has secured overnight an additional 20 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine in line with the advice of the Scientific Industry Technical Advisory Group on vaccines led by Professor Brendan Murphy. Now, through our advance purchase agreement with Pfizer, these additional 20 million Pfizer doses means that Australia will now receive a total of 40 million Pfizer doses in 2021. It is anticipated that these additional 20 million doses will be available in quarter four of this year. That's our current instruction, and we'll obviously be doing everything we can to seek to move that forward where we can. Australia has entered into four separate agreements for the supply of COVID-19 vaccines, and these include agreements with Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Novavax and COVAX. And these agreements now total up to some 170 million doses. I want to stress again that the advice that has been received, the recommendations that have been received from the Australian Technical Advisory Group on immunisation is not a ban on the AstraZeneca vaccine. It is not a prohibition on the AstraZeneca vaccine. It recommends and notes that the risk of these side effects are remote. They are very rare. We're talking in the vicinity of 5 to 6 per million, which is a rather rare event. But it must be acknowledged. And it's important so Australians can make informed decisions about their vaccination and their health care with their medical professionals, with their doctor.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison on Australia securing additional Pfizer vaccines, which is now Australian Health Authority's preferred vaccine for those under 50 years of age. Following this announcement, the Torres and Cape Hospital and Health Service COVID-19 vaccination program has been paused today while the Health Service works through the details of the new national recommendations. Here's Mayor of the Torres Shire, Vonda Malone.
I've only received advice about that in the last couple of hours. I did request that we will need to have some further discussions with Queensland Health on what it means. Obviously, the logistics around the Pfizer vaccine, why it wasn't the preferred vaccine to roll out in the remoter areas, has challenges. That's something that we will need to continue having those sort of frank discussions on what it actually means and how it will possibly work or not work for remote areas. And that does only apply for us in the Torres, but obviously right throughout Australia.
In WA's Kimberley region, an Aboriginal medical service has described the decision as a big blow. Yurrayungi Medical Service in Halls Creek has begun rolling out the AstraZeneca jab because it doesn't have fridges cold enough to store the Pfizer vaccine. The service's CEO, Brenda Garstone, says she's worried some people will lose trust in coronavirus vaccines altogether.
It is a big blow. Our people are very, very scared, and they have been watching the news. And right now, the headlines are there are links of the blood clotting to the COVID vaccine. This is going to really take us back 20 steps backwards.
Over the border in the Northern Territory, Health Minister Natasha Fyle says the Territory's remote vaccine rollout will likely be delayed as plans are overhauled in the wake of the AstraZeneca vaccine changes. NT health authorities had planned to primarily use AstraZeneca for the rollout to remote communities, but the minister says authorities will now investigate ways to transport the Pfizer vaccine for people under 50 years of age.
So the Pfizer vaccine does need to be stored at extremely cold temperatures, but you can use dry ice and other transport measures to get the vaccine out into community. So what we will do is we will go back and recalibrate all of our vaccination plans for the Territory. We're now working through what that actually means in terms of delivering the vaccine on the ground. It will certainly have an impact. We've acknowledged that. And so we will work in earnest to recalibrate our plans, and we'll share that with the community.
That's Northern Territory Health Minister Natasha Fyles.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
With international travel off the menu, Australians have flooded regional destinations like never before. But severe staff shortages and an ongoing housing crisis mean many businesses have been unable to fully capitalise on the influx. This is an issue we've been covering here on Australia Wide in recent weeks, and we often look at a number of affected coastal tourist communities, but now we head to the high country instead. Businesses in the New South Wales Snowy Mountains fear they won't be able to cope this snow season as the region grips with dire staff shortages and an ongoing housing crisis. Jindabyne Cafe owner Renee Buchner has already lost staff who couldn't find a place to live. She shares her fears for the winter season with Bega reporter Kira Proud.
For businesses, we're really struggling to find the staff to accommodate those visitors. We love having the visitors here. We are so grateful for them to come in to visit, but it's really tough trying to staff to accommodate those visitors. So there's a massive shortage in staff because no one can find anywhere to stay. I've lost staff because they haven't been able to find accommodation to stay in the area, which is really, really tough. This Easter, we actually had to close Good Friday and Easter Sunday because I couldn't staff it properly. I didn't have the staff available. So it was nothing about wages, nothing about anything like that. It was just I didn't physically have the staff to keep up with the demand.
Because it's been very busy, I hear, because there's no international travel.
Yeah.
And there's just a big push for this domestic travel now. So I suppose, are you worried about going into winter with this?
Absolutely. I wake at night going, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? Like, what's it going to bring? How am I going to, like, I already do 7 days, and because I don't have the staff to cover a day off for me. So it's really, really tough on us businesses because we want to provide the great service that people come and love and the hospitality, but to staff it properly is really, really hard.
Some seasonal workers have turned to camp on Jindabyne Lakes foreshore in the past as their only remaining option. But last year, informal camping was banned by the local council. So now key stakeholders, including the town's Chamber of Commerce and the Snowy Monaro Regional Council, are working towards some solutions. One being the possibility of finding land to set up a campground with facilities for seasonal workers. Jindabyne Chamber's president, Olivier Kapitanikos, is among those pushing for the idea.
In one way, we're lucky to have this problem, and certainly we're lucky to be in good company. We've got some very large employers who do facilitate a certain level of accommodation for their own workers. So the resorts have the ability of housing a great number of workers. But that's only the resorts. Whenever you have resorts, you have all the auxiliary businesses that feeds the resorts. You have the restaurants, the takeaway stores, you have the cleaners, you have the maintenance people. Exactly the same as the resorts. A whole lot of people come in for those jobs, and it's basically those people that are having difficulty finding somewhere to live. They resort to camping. They have resorted to free camping, and some of them resort to what's known as van lifing, where they live in their cars or they live in these purpose-built vans. In Jindabyne, we don't really have any place to house them. There are caravan parks, and certainly there are other institutions like the Ventus Centre, for instance, who has a limited number of available spots, but there's clearly not enough. The council, did a good job in moving the free lifers or free campers out of the Clay Pits area and to disperse them. They stayed in the area, but they just kept on moving. Dispersing them doesn't really solve the issue. The Chamber's working on a couple of options. One is to find a block of land that can be used by an organisation that will be set up specifically to cater for van lifers. So we don't want to compete against caravan parks, but certainly we want to be able to offer a space where the van lifers or the seasonal workers can find safe and a hygienic place to reside for winter.
That was Jindabyne Chamber of Commerce President Olivia Kapitanikos speaking with ABC reporter Kira Proust.
ABC Australia Wide.
The pilot will dump fuel and then light the afterburners, and it just shoots out a massive flame of lit up jet fuel. Yeah, it's a party trick.
On ABC Radio.
And you're with me, Alex Hyman. Great to have your company. Female motorists are increasingly making their presence felt in the Australian motorsports scene. Almost 20% of entrants at the country's latest car festival, Rocky Nats in Rockhampton, were women. A passionate group of female rev heads are making it their mission to grow the ranks. ABC reporter Tobias Jertz-Lewis spoke with female motorists Letitia Tiche Chunti and Judith Menso.
A cyclone of smoke and the smell of heated rubber erupts from the tyres as Letitia Shuntai's VK Commodore roars onto the burnout track. The bright pink beast, emblazoned with the plates Party Time, certainly makes a statement.
That was the original plan, to try and get more females to have a go.
Was that part of why you painted it bright pink now?
Yeah, try to make people aware that it is actually a chick driving.
After 4 years of burning rubber in events from Cairns to Canberra, it's hard to imagine this confident, charismatic young woman nervously taking the wheel for her first competition.
My brother, Untani Towan, he was doing burnout comps when I was like 6 years old, so I was pit crewing for him. But I only started actually driving a car probably the last 4 or 5 years. I was nervous because I was nervous of criticism, to be honest, because I didn't want to be judged, you know, going against all the guys and not really knowing what I was doing yet. But they totally surprised me and everyone was super supportive.
Tiche and her flamboyant Commodore have since become a renowned feature of the burnout scene, and she's hoping to inspire more women to the sport.
I did start off just only taking like female passengers for rides and get them involved, and just seeing their reaction for the first time. Pretty much screaming and smiling, going, that was awesome, you know. And yeah, and some of them have even been like, I want to now do this. So that was really cool.
By her side in championing the cause is a blue X-tradie ute, driven by Shazza Adams, a purple-haired cult figure of the skid community, who's known more commonly as Mama. Shazza says she grabbed the wheel of her husband's car at a skid competition 7 years ago.
And I thought, oh, I've got to have a go. And that was 6, 7 years ago.
She's been taking the sport by storm ever since, becoming the first woman to compete in burnouts at Red Centre Nats in Alice Springs.
I'll always jump in beside a young girl and show them what I've been taught.
Shazza says her mantra is a simple one.
Don't let a man ever tell you you can't do it.
Female motorists have become an increasingly prevalent feature of Australia's motorsports scene, to the point that almost 20% of entrants at the country's latest car festival, Rocky Nats, were female. Owen Webb, who's been involved with Australia's biggest car festivals for more than 3 decades, says the female presence is on the rise.
Huge, absolutely, with more females. And that's actually happened from not just with entrants, but overall in the whole, especially spray painting industry, there's been some really, really talented females.
One is Rachel Durbidge, who owns an automotive spray painting shop in Western Australia and now travels across the country to judge car festivals. She says the community's like a family and is happy to welcome any new participants.
When I started, there wasn't many girls in the industry. There's probably about 2 or 3 that I knew of around Australia, but now there's more and more. And just seeing everyone else come through, the younger girls coming through now, they're absolutely nailing it here, over in the States, everywhere. Burnout comp, spray painting, anything in the industry at all where it's mainly male-dominated is actually good and quite normal now to see females involved.
Tobias Jers-Lewis with that story. To the Gold Coast now, where a man is devoting part of his picturesque property at the base of the Pinnacle along the border ranges to be set aside as a koala habitat. In coming months, John Quayle will team up with koala groups to plant more than 4,000 gum trees. It's just the latest transformation for the land that was the site of Australia's first permaculture farm. And that has also been given a new lease of life. Reporter Kathy Border spoke with the retired vet, John Quayle, about his proposed koala corridor on his land.
Fantastic spot. We live in, I think we live in God's heaven out here.
Your halfway house is at Chevron Island, though.
Yes, well,
what a difference.
It is a very big difference, but Chevron's very nice, but I much prefer to be down here all the time.
This farm has a world first history.
Yes, originally this was, well, it was back in the early days, it was a lot of logging here. They used to log a lot of cedar trees, turpentine trees, and then in the early 1920s or the early 1900s, they started off as a dairy farm. And for a long period of time, it was a dairy farm back into probably about early 1980s. And then in 1980, it had enormous change. It was purchased by the father of permaculture, which is Bill Mollison. And Bill and his entourage worked out here for several years. Enormous amount of work done, and this is where he developed his permaculture principles on this farm.
Have you still got the basics of it here? Are you looking at getting it all up and running again?
Yes, it's all operational now. It took a long time because what happened was that there was a big dispute in their group in the early days, in the early 90s, and they closed the property up for almost 20 years and he went back to Tasmania to live, and only after he passed away several years ago, that's when we purchased the property. So it was very run down, and we've done a lot of work resurrecting it, and we've got a lot of dams on the property. We've done an environment, because it had been locked up for so long, there's been no chemicals used on this property for well over 40 years, and so it's got an enormously strong ecosystem. So the ecosystem here is quite unbelievable when you sort of see the animals, the wildlife, and right from the ground up with the butterflies and all that. It's quite amazing how strong the ecosystem is, and we're continuing to develop that and use it as a keep it as an organic farm.
What would I be surprised that are here animal-wise?
I think here you'll see, funnily enough, you'll often see dingoes wandering through. We have dingoes come through from the national park, and a lot of people don't like the dingoes, but as far as I'm concerned, I think that they're part of the natural ecosystem, and they eat a lot of anything dead, mainly dead, but fortunately they do get through and they cause a bit of problems further along. But we see black cockatoos. We've got a lot of big herds of black cockatoos. We have a lot of parrots, wildlife, echidnas. We got down in the creek, which is quite incredible. We've got platypus in the creek, and it goes on and on and on. I mean, it's whatever you want is here.
In coming months, John is embarking on a huge project to turn 25 acres of his property into a koala corridor.
We're embarking on a fairly big plantation planting program to plant about 4,000 trees around one of the migration dams where the migratory birds come through. So we'll have an area we'll close off and plant the trees in there. So the koalas, hopefully, in a year or so, we'll have a substantial food source.
You're doing it with the Bangalow Koala Group. I imagine they were pretty thrilled when you touched base with them.
Well, yes, they're pretty happy to have a nice area that's, in proximity to the national park and where you can get a good food source for the koalas. Yes, they're very happy. It's great, and it's a nice property to be on because, we're fairly concerned about environmental protection.
How much of your property will be taken up with that?
Probably about 25 acres. Mm-hmm. So there'll be, it's a reasonable size area. The property is 165 acres, and we've got several core environmental areas which I've designated, and we're closing off, and things like a wildlife corridor which comes down from the national park, so that'll link into the koala planting areas.
Will this be permanently set aside in your eyes as a koala corridor?
Absolutely. As long as I'm alive, I guess that I've the property's in a family trust, so hopefully the you know, the rest of my family will continue on, and they understand the issue, so I can't see why it won't continue.
The former vet still has a house on the Gold Coast at Chevron Island, but it's at the base of the pinnacle that he calls home.
Well, it's a bit of a change from veterinary science, but I think, you know, we've got animals here, and so it's we look after them and treat them. So luckily I don't have to get taken to a vet. So it's with the vet fees as they are today, I'm glad I can look after my own animals. So that's lucky.
It's your own little nirvana, isn't it? Congratulations.
Yes, we love it here. It's a great spot, and we know we've got a farmstay building here as well, so we welcome guests to come and stay, so it's quite nice. But particularly kids. It's really good to have kids come down, city kids come down and feed the chooks and walk around and see the animals. That's probably the best part of it.
Is the rule that you've got to lock your devices and mobile phones away when you arrive here?
Well, unfortunately, we have NBN broadband because people don't want to come unless they've got NBN broadband. And unfortunately, the kids today. But we do make a rule that during the day, the kids can't turn their laptops on, or their iPads. So I think there's too much to do during the day here for them to be out on iPads. So I say to the parents, just let them enjoy the place without their iPads during the day.
Sounds like a good rule. That's retired vet John Quayle speaking with Kathy Border.
ABC Australia Wide.
And finally tonight we head to the Kimberley, where some of the youngest rodeo hopefuls have been learning the ropes at a potty riding and stock handling school in Kununurra. For aspiring cowboys and cowgirls, potty riding is often the first step to learning how to balance on the back of a bucking beast. Junior riders hang on to a potty calf for as long as possible, just like their bull riding heroes. Courtney Fowler drove over to the Kununurra Rodeo Grounds to watch the little rodeo stars in action.
My name's Hayden and I'm 10 and I am from Perth. I find it quite a little bit tricky because it's hard to get on them because they could kick you off or like when you go up to pat them or like train them.
What's the trick to staying on, do you think? Because it looks a bit tricky to balance.
You want to put your hand under a bit of rope, wrap it around like a wrap, hold on to it tight, move forward so you're onto the rope, and then you put your hand up and then you stop moving on the bull.
And then you kind of look a bit like a professional bull rider, don't you?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Jack. And I just did stock handling, now I'm doing bull riding.
How did you find the stock handling?
Fun. I'm from Kununurra and I live out in Paxsaddle.
Oh, do you? Do you have horses and stuff at home?
No, but we have a couple of cows. Yesterday I did 4 good rides, the last one on my 5th. I fell off in the chute and it landed on top of me.
Oh my goodness!
So my leg hurts.
You're very brave. Do you ride in a lot of rodeos?
Most of them.
Really? How many have you done?
I've done all the Kununurra ones since I was only 4. And my first time was when I was 3 turning 4.
So the potty was bigger than you?
Yeah, much bigger.
When you get on the potty, how long do you have to stay on there for?
When you're big, like an adult,
yes,
you do it for 8 seconds. When you're a little kid, you do it for 6 seconds.
Did you stay on the potty for 6 seconds, do you reckon?
No, because
8 seconds.
The potty just flung me off and made me do a belly flop. And
do you want to do the rodeos when you're older?
Don't know yet.
Well.
Because I got 2 things that I want to be when I'm older.
Oh, what's that?
A bull rider and an AFL player. I don't know how am I going to choose or not.
I'm here for the potty riding school in the camp draft school. I'm from Roebuck Plain Station and I'm Aaron.
Do you ride a lot at home? Out at Roebuck?
Yes.
Do you have a potty calf at home?
Yeah, our sister owns 60 potty calves.
It's important when you're handling stock.
To make sure that I have a little bit of space go around them and keep an eye on them.
Amber.
Where are you from?
Broome.
So you travel a little way?
Yeah.
And I saw you just had to go at the potty.
Yeah.
You stayed on pretty well.
Yeah.
And do you reckon you'll have another go?
Yes. I'm doing the Gymkhana on Saturday. I like cam drafting.
how different is it riding the potty to the horse?
It's different, yeah.
That's young Amber ending that report from Courtney Fowler at the Kununurra Rodeo Grounds. The Little Rodeo Stars holiday program was hosted by the Kununurra Camp Draft and Rodeo Association. And that's the program for this week. Wonderful to have your company. Sinead Mangan will be back next week. I'm Alex Hyman. Have a great weekend.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.